Universität Hamburg.
Good afternoon again. I'm going to start with a view of where we are. This is ISC. The top 500 got announced this week. It's always a good place to take a snapshot of where the industry is. And it's been an exciting top 500 again this year. Of course, the number one system from Japan, breaking the 8 petaflop barrier, is exciting to see the growth of the top machine. For Intel, it's been a very good top 500. The Xeon 5500 is the most widely used CPU on the list in 213 systems. In some ways, as an indication of the continuing acceptance of the technology, 90% of the new systems on top 500 list feature an Intel Xeon processor. Five of the top 10 HPC systems are using Xeon, as a testament to the Xeon's ability to power some of the most powerful computers in the world. Our product, the generation of product that we're selling today, the Westmere, has increased 3x to about 178 systems from November 2010, a mere 6 months ago, and is the most used processor in new listings. And ISC being in Europe, it's always a pride and privilege to mention that the number one system in Europe in CEA runs on Intel. So while it's the top 500 list is always a very interesting snapshot and an indicator of where things are and where things have been recently, and quite justifiably bragging rights for people and their investments over many months and years, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time dissecting the top 500. Instead, what I'm going to do in my allotted time is actually to talk about what this top 500 list, the snapshot of today, might look like in the future. And in doing so, I'm going to address a few things, I would call them myths, that might affect a view of what the top 500 or even the supercomputing industry or the HPC industry at large would be facing. I'm going to present these myths. You may agree or disagree with me, but as long as you think about them, and we generate both here as well as in the days, months, and years to come, the right discussion on these points, I think I would have been successful. So with that, let's get started. Myth number one, Moore's Law is dead or dying. Being from Intel, I hear this question about, it's the most asked question of me in many sense. And the reason for asking this question is Moore's Law has been the economic and the technology, quote-unquote, law that has helped for many decades now the progression of technology, both through integration as well as reduction of power and performance for many of the architectural innovations the world has seen as continues to see. Moore's Law, contrary to the myth, is alive and well. We are at 22 nanometers, and very recently, about a month ago, we announced a revolutionary technology for called the three-dimensional transistor, which actually many had foreseen the ability to scale the size of the transistor and maintain some of the Moore's Law scaling parameters as being near impossible in the very near future. This 3D transistor has broken through that with 37% performance gain at low voltage and more than 50% reduction of active power at constant performance. This is a revolutionary. It continues Moore's Law forward and as the foundation for all computing forever. Now, people have asked me and have actually asked Gordon Moore that forever never happens, and his answer to that forever was, yes, a darn long time is forever. So Moore's Law, the foundation for all computing, is here, alive and well, for a darn long time. Let's go to myth number two. Accelerators are the only path to 100x, where 100x refers to stunning, really about 100x performance gains. While it is true that some applications and some implementations of accelerators are generating stunning performance. The myth that everything that we've done up till today is destined for the garbage can and the accelerators are the only way to get 100x is not quite true. Let me offer you the anatomy of 109x improvement for a real piece of code, a public financial derivatives application combining binomial tree and Monte Carlo written in plain C++. We measured the wall time, compiled with GCC C++, and it ran for 693 seconds. It generated single-threaded code. We used our own version of Parallel Studio XE, which is a parallelization tool. No hand-coded SSE. We just vectorized, used the CPU cores and the threads, and that same application ran in 13.95 seconds. In the third step, we took that code and simply recompiled it to run, to transform it from a multi-core to a many-core architecture, the new many-integrated core architecture prototype that we have in our labs and some of you have seen as well. And that reduced the runtime to 6.35 seconds. So about 109x improvement, 98% of wall time was saved, not by adopting a different architecture, but by simply properly using, intelligently using, CPU cores, threads, and facilities like SSE. Let's go to myth number three. Explicitly managed locality is in, caches are out. Locality is important. No one will contest that. The myth, we believe, is explicitly managed locality is the only way out, and other ways in which hardware has cooperated with the programmer to provide the benefits of locality must be thrown away. Caches, they remain the common programmer's best friend. If you look at this chart, you see memory bandwidth, level 2 and level 1 cache bandwidth, compared both in relative bandwidth and bandwidth per watt, which is the energy savings, hugely still being an important way to deliver properly used locality. So while they may not be the only solution, and well-managed locality both at the node and across nodes over the fabric are important, caches by no means have lost their value or their appeal. Myth number four. It's only about performance. It's only about 100x, 1000x, or 2000x. Effort and time to performance don't matter, as long as you have those stunning results. You don't have to take my word for it. People do care about time to solution and effort, and they are watching. On the foil, I'm not sure whether all of you in the back can read it or not, but in every case, people have tried, in this case, the many integrated core architecture-based coprocessor, which is different than the traditional multi-core Xeon processor. They've taken their important applications and done an exercise of understanding how much performance they would get by going and adopting the application to this new architecture. In each of these cases, it's verbatim that while they report the benefits of the performance gained, they also very explicitly mentioned the amount of time it took to get that performance. You can read that for yourself. The most stunning one is moving a code to mic might involve sitting down and adding a couple of lines of directives. Moving a code to a GPU is a project. Myth number five, a radically different software programming model is a must-have and is the only model for parallelism. We are faced with a choice. We have rich levels of concurrency, rich levels of expression of concurrency at the instruction, data, thread, and cluster level. We can't give that up if we are going to maintain a rational way to program very complex applications and complex systems. Data parallelism is important. It's not the only thing. Finally, a realistic path to the future from our perspective is it's really not, as we talk about exascale, it's really not about building an exascale computer. It's about a business-scalable path to exascale. Today's architectures, models, and applications can evolve to exascale. A significant amount of research has to be done, important grand challenges solved, but it can't be done at the expense of jettisoning all of the investment that has happened till date in the field of HPC. Finally, programmer efficiency, time to solution, and flexibility are reality-driven requirements for the business. To say otherwise is to live in denial if you only focus on performance and performance per watt. And with that, I'm done.
Thank you very much, Rajiv. The first question is going to be from Jack.
Rajiv, thank you very much for that very interesting presentation about the future for Intel. Let me pose my question not as a myth, but as a conjecture. The conjecture is that some of your competitors have chosen an architecture which is based on a very efficient architectural, power-efficient way of doing business, namely ARM. And the conjecture is that since Mike is using x86 as its core, it can't possibly be very power efficient.
That's an interesting question, Jack. And actually, you did refer to a myth, even though if it was a conjecture. So the x86 instruction set can have multiple ways of implementation. And if you look at what we've done in the x86 land with the Atom processor, there is significant headroom to make simplifications in the microarchitecture coupled with the Moore's Law process technology to continue to fundamentally reduce power consumption at the core level. In a system combined with efficient power management of both the cores and the uncores, as we call them, we see significant headroom for continuously improving the performance per watt capability while continuing to maintain a programming model that is familiar and usable with high efficiency.
Thank you.
Frank Pendlin.
Thank you for the interesting talk, too. And I'm also interested on the myth, in particular myth 2. And you mentioned that accelerator is not the only way, I mean, to achieve 100x. And you raised the example as financial derivative applications, actually, which is more based on random walk. And there's a lot of embarrassing parallelism there. So it's really, I'm interested whether you can say, for general term, whether the I/O and the networking, in addition to the energy parts, support your issue that this is the future instead of the other architecture.
So let me clarify something before I answer the question. Acceleration and heterogeneous architectures that are tuned for performance in performance per watt for certain tasks are important, are relevant, and are going to get even more relevant in the future. But we've been doing that for the last 15, 20 years. If you look at the Mathco processors that first sold, and my first computer kit was an 8085 SDK board that came with the 287 Mathco processor. That was the right way to do floating point. We integrated it, thanks to Moore's Law and architectural innovation, into our processors over time. So if you look at, you know, how SSC and some of the vectorization support is implemented in our processors today, they are done at the cluster and the FUB level with dedicated hardware. The point that I was trying to make is while different applications have different profiles and needs for different kinds of performance per watt, the only path isn't for every particular case to build a custom piece of hardware and expose it through a custom proprietary programming model.
Okay. Thank you very much.